Thanks for hanging in there. And we always like to have you guys check us out. We're going to be checking us out, Ava.
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And, of course, Facebook. Like us, please, Don.
Yes, on Facebook.
Lots of cool stuff.
Yep.
And feel free to send us pics. You get those deer, send them. You get salmon, send them. We'll put them up so you can take a look at them, and all those can enjoy it as well. And maybe a little description of what you did and where we were at.
Not just salmon, any good fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything. Doesn't matter. I'm just using it as an example.
Your best squirrel.
What?
You can get a squirrel. Nice squirrel, and we'd love squirrel. To see a picture of it.
People go squirrel hunting, you know?
Mm-hmm. They're going to start getting fat here.
Send us your squirrel pics.
Yep,
and
we'll
if they have
enjoy
antlers,
them.
If they have antlers, I want first call to come and do the story on it.
Hey, little kids holding up squirrels, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun.
What's your next story here?
We'll
you know,
dig
so fast,
it.
Don, what's the transition out of that?
Yeah.
Oh,
I, am I reading this right?
Yeah.
Iowa teen?
Yep. Unfortunate story, and I think really what it does is it highlights the fact that regardless of what you're doing in hunting, regardless of caliber of weapon that you're using, you've got to be absolutely careful practicing safe hunting. And sad story out of Iowa Department of Natural Resources, the 17-year-old squirrel hunter has died from injuries in an accidental shooting by another hunter. And that occurred last Sunday. Carson Ryan, 17, of Washington, Iowa, was mistaken for a squirrel by a member of his hunting party and was struck in the back of the head. He was transported to the medical care center where he later died from injuries. Department of Natural Resources, in collaboration with Washington County Sheriff's Office, responded to the incident. He was an active member of the student body in Washington High School. Sad, obviously, and prayers go to the family and classmates and teammates in Washington High School. It's a sad deal. There has been a GoFundMe created, so if you want to log in to find that, it would be under Carson Ryan. No, I believe it's Ryan Carson. No, I'm sorry. It's Carson Ryan. It's sometimes they put the wrong name in there, but last name is Ryan. Carson is his first name. Again, a GoFundMe for Carson Ryan's been set up. There's been $56,000 that has been donated so far. And obviously, this is to help defray some of the costs and also, you know, other pieces and parts that go along with such tragedy that they've encountered. So, again, prayers go out to the Carson Ryan family. And, again, Don, it goes to show you got to be careful. Know your target. Don't assume anything. This is one of the stranger stories that I've seen, though.
I was going to say, this one kind of puzzles me that it would happen in the way that it did.
Yeah.
But the accidents happen.
And people sound shoot, as we've heard stories of that. I have never done that. In fact, positively identifying without question the target you're shooting at, regardless of what that is, you have to make sure that you know what it is. Identify that and do not go forward until you can. If it's moving and it's a brown color or whatever in the woods, because right now you're not needing to have orange on to identify.
Not for squirrel hunting.
Yeah.
But it would be helpful.
Yeah, it would.
It would be a safety measure. And the other thing I'm speculating, but it maybe happened at low light, either evening or early morning.
Or it could be heavy brush and he was wearing the wrong color stuff, thinking, hey, there must be something running around the woods, as you know how that goes.
Yep.
Sitting in a deer stand hearing a squirrel and you're like, well, it's a deer. Well, it's actually a squirrel.
Yeah, I'm aware of a friend that actually got shot deer hunting from a stand with a bow. And he was very lucky that it hit him in the elbow, or it would have been fatal.
That's
yep.
That's sad. So be safe always, no matter what you're doing. Whether you're trying to get onto a stand, a deer stand, make sure you're wearing your safety harness. Please, let's make sure we start the season off right.
Review all the safety.
And have a program on your phone that can detect if you fall.
Yep.
That will save your life.
Yep. And if you're in a stand, yep.
Yep, really important. So, you and I have talked about this a lot, Don. I think we've mentioned it at various points throughout the year. When you leave fish in the freezer improperly stored, you get what's called freezer burn.
Yep.
And it's brown, and you got to cut it off the fillet, and it's just not good, right? So the concept, you know, obviously we're putting a freezer fish in a freezer to do what?
To preserve it
or delay. Yep. So you don't have to eat the fish before they go bad. And what's difference, and this is funny, the difference between a freezer compartment of a refrigerator and a dedicated standalone freezer, some think there's no difference other than size in most modern refrigerator freezers. Wrong. If the freezer in your kitchen is less than 25 years old, chances are the freezer compartment is frost-free. So that can be a big difference. Various pizzas, ice cream, whatever, if it's not developing a layer of frost, it's frost-free. It's great for people who eat pizzas, ice cream, or fish, and none of the products that stay in the freezer for more than a week or for long-term storage. That's a piece of importance. Why? Because most of them have a heater in them. When the freezer doors open and some of the cold air comes inside, the warm air comes inside, cold air escapes, it's replaced by the warm air, it has water vapor. When it contacts below freezing surface, the moisture turns to frost.
Yep.
So for a non-frost-free freezer, frost builds up. Those are the old-time freezer compartments, and they have to defrost them every couple months. Frost-free, those type of refrigerators/freezers eliminate that by shutting down the cooling coils, in most cases turning on a heater to warm the cooling mechanisms in the sides of the compartment and the surface of the packages so that they stay frost-free. And depending on the design, it happens maybe two or three or four times a day, which I did not know. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
So frozen food stored in a frost-free refrigerator combo for a short period is largely unaffected. Longer storage can turn a package of fresh fish into a freeze-dried remnant that should have been eaten properly soon or stored in a stand-up freezer. Some upright freezers are available as frost-free, but they have one feature in them that makes them different. It's a fan. Each time the door is open in an upright freezer, most of the cold air is heavier than warm. It escapes and is replaced by the warmer room air. That causes frost. With the fan on a regular freezer that turns on, it quickly exhausts the warm air, pushes it out before moisture can turn into frost. The key to freezing fish for a long time, regardless of the type of freezer, is to eliminate any contact with air by packaging the different packaging techniques. What do you use, Don?
I use a vacuum sealer and a chamber vacuum sealer.
Yep. That's the same thing I do.
And that's the only way I know of to get rid of any air that's in the package and seal it tight to the...
Now, the other way that many people have done, I mean, probably when I was a kid...
You'll freeze it in water.
In a milk carton. Remember we did that. Plastic bags, Ziploc bags, that's the same thing too, so you can see the fillet. And that works, obviously. The big thing when you put it in water, obviously the package is bulky. That's a problem. And, of course, make sure you write the date on bags that you put in the freezer so you know exactly how long it's been in there. The freeze-thaw refreeze cycle mostly only affects the water, not the fish, in those refreeze scenarios. Most people... more than ever using vacuum sealers, which I do the same. And vacuum package eliminates most of the air and keeps things good for a longer period of time. I like it because I know that if I smoke fish, I can put it in there, pull it all out. I'm not having any of the issues I had with freezer burn before. non-existent. Nope. The only thing I do different, Don, when I'm sealing up, if I buy them in a tube, so you can buy them two ways. You can buy them as a preset
size bag.
Bag, or you can get them in a tube.
Yep.
When you get them in a tube and you cut it, one thing I make sure to do is to double seal the ends. More often than not, when you're going to find is, oh, it looks sealed. And then you'll go back, look in the refrigerator or in the freezer. It's not vacuum anymore.
Right.
And some people
air
say,
is leaked in.
Yeah. And some people say, well, you can just put it in the freezer to firm it up and then not in a vacuum bag and then put it in so you don't have whatever.
Moisture.
If you have a vacuum machine, there is a dry or wet cycle. So it will pull the moisture out. Sometimes they'll put a paper towel if they're excessively wet. But I generally dry them with a paper towel, make sure that is the case.
Except for you don't need to do that. You still are supposed to do that because your fish will stay fresher if you do not have water on them. If you just towel dry them, and then if you use a chamber vacuum, those you can seal up soup in them. So it doesn't draw the liquid up into where you're going to seal it. So
yeah. Well, and the certain units that the one I've got, it pulls it up and puts it in a little like a
tray
containment area.
And right, but it doesn't. It. But it's very iffy if that's going to seal if there's any moisture that is in there when it seals.
Yep, and so, that's why I generally go double seal. And it's
well, double
works.
Seal on the bottom and in the top. I even double seal, I'll put a paper towel across there to try to capture any moisture that's trying to sneak out of there.
Absolutely. Yep, and that works. That works well. So kind of a cool scenario there. But yeah, making sure you package them up makes a big difference. And whatever you have, but I'd recommend going out and buying one of those. What are they, about $120, I think, $130?
For a sealer?
Yeah.
No, a good one's around $300.
Well, but I mean, minimum.
You can buy like a food saver, I believe, probably in that $130.
I think it's a little bit less than that, but you can, you go on to Amazon and they've got various, I've got a really good stainless one. It's multiple sizes and it works great. And I think I paid $229, I think it was, or something like that. But yeah, and then you can of course buy the bulk packaging online. And
yep.
So we talked a little bit about the Afton man who had two close calls and ended up filling his tag for the Minnesota opening elk season out of Carlstead, Minnesota, when the four tags were up for grabs for one of the 4,000 elk hunters who applied. George Clements was successful in the draw, and it was a special opportunity because I believe it is a once-in-a-lifetime tag. He didn't know about elk hunting in Minnesota about 5 years ago, and he started applying. He said he's hunted elk three times in Colorado and found out he would receive either sex tag this fall, and it's a state he's lived in for more than 40 years, so he got pretty excited about that fact. And his wife says, to say that I was animated was something, to say the least. You could tell it was the biggest smile I'd had in a very long time. When he began applying for the tag, he told his oldest brother, who lives in Wisconsin, if they were ever to receive one, his brother should come hunt with him. So he called him up and enlisted his help. Limited Minnesota residence, and it's once in a lifetime. That's confirming what we said earlier. And I won't tell you what he got first, but I'll tell you a little bit about the story. Something at least the size that he was going to have mounted. He was thinking he's going to, you know, get a bull because he can get either one. He would keep the antlers as a trophy. And he said it's tasty. He's had some of it already. He spent weeks preparing, scouting, talking to local residents about the hunting in the area. Made it an incredible opportunity, he said. He lives in Afton, but he traveled to the hunting grounds a few weeks prior to scout and consult landowners and DNR people and understand where the elk were. He'd been there a month previously to talk to farmers in the DNR, whoever he could get a hold of. Just before the season kicked off in September, he arrived to scout for the big animals. And the Thursday and Friday before the hunt, we saw elk in the private land, but they were moving every morning around sunup off the private land onto public land. He spent the first few days hunting the area where he saw them, but missed opportunity after missed opportunity, which go figure, Don, right? He said there was an elk responding to the calls. That's the coolest thing ever. If you ever watched some videos and responding to how they respond to elk call, but that animal would never exit the woods along another medium-sized bull snuck up on him from behind, and he wasn't ready to shoot. He said he had one more than 15 yards behind him. He said he couldn't turn around because he was very wary, and then it winded him, and that took off. Wednesday morning, he was hunting private land where he had permission to be and was anticipating a bull emerge from the woods when he spotted in a cattle pasture. He bugled to it. It responded and looked right at him and took off. Wrong time, wrong place, he said. And unfortunately, for 10 minutes, he had a 7x7 bull 30 yards from him. He could have shot one for the bow and arrow, but the problem is he couldn't quite get a good shot at it. And how about that, Don?
30 yards away and he couldn't get a shot
seven,
at it?
7x7. It was grazing. Oh, sad deal.
He'll have nightmares on that one.
It's too bad. It's a once-in-a-lifetime hunt, but he did fill it. He ended up with a cow, but it weighed 300 pounds in a cow elk. So he's happy. He's bummed that he couldn't get a big rack on it, but that's the way it goes. The state's bee season kicked off on September 27th. Another two state hunters are chasing the opportunity to take an antlerless elk from Zone 30 before Sunday, October 5th, this coming weekend. And Red Lake members have harvested five bulls, five more hunters equipped with tags, take animal by the end of the year. And, yeah, the bulls are the ones that come to the call, so make sure you call them in. Kind of a cool deal. But the state and Red Lake agreed the 14 elk from the Northwest Herd to be a safe harvest level. So congrats to you guys. Very, very cool. And one parting gift note, Don, James Hauptman has just won the 2025 Federal Duck Stamp Art Contest for a record 7 times.
Must be pretty good.
Yeah.
Those brothers are something else, aren't they?
They're amazing. They're mm-hmm. absolutely amazing. What also is amazing is the fact that we're done, Don.
Yeah.
Amazing. When you're,
another week.
I know. Another week goes by. I hope you all have a great time in the woods. It's going to be warm, so dress properly. Have a good time out there. And, of course, as always, be safe no matter where you're at in the outdoors. For Ava, Don, and myself, I'm Eric. We are the Valley Outdoors. See you until next week.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.